thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry. Dave and I have a special guest on today. It's Uncle Rico from Napoleon. No, I'm kidding. Colton Rico from
Suave Rico. Is that Suave Rico?
I think something like that. No?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Colton was good enough to hop on the show with us this weekend. Colton, you work for muzzle-loaders.com. You guys are an online distributor for muzzle loaders?
Retailer, I think, is the probably the clerical term there, but yeah, okay. I mean, we do it all. Our specialty is black powder.
Gotcha. How I stumbled across you guys, Dave and I didn't know a lot about muzzleloader stuff. We've been around them, but with the increase in tags in the state of Nevada this year in those primitive weapon classes, we started doing a little research. I stumbled upon your website, and you guys have an entire, it's like a muzzleloaders for beginners section of the website that takes you through each step. Absolutely phenomenal resource. And then I realized no one wants to hear Dave and I fumble through this stuff. Let's get somebody from the company on the show.
Your website's fantastic. We've been reading through it and stuff because both Henry and I are now in the market to get muzzleloaders and then discuss our progress on our show, what's working, what's not, and how much we suck at it and things like that.
That's a fact.
So your website has just been the go-to for us right now because it's got everything we need to know.
Colton, tell me a little bit about yourself. I know as we were talking before the show, you're based out of Oregon. Man, did you grow up there, grow up hunting?
No, I'm from Idaho originally and have kind of found my way out here to the beautiful northeast corner of Oregon where we're located and settled here. Didn't really grow up an avid hunter. I am an avid gun guy, but not the largest hunter by any means compared to some of the folks around here. But I've done it. I've gone out and had some success. But being a gun guy, this scratches my itch. This niche of muzzle loading is so specific and so intricate with all the details that I found myself really enjoying it.
So are you one of the guys that takes a muzzle loader out to like a grand?
Yeah, we've done it with our 40 cal Paramount. I mean, we have a range pretty close to our warehouse here, so we do get out and do a lot of testing on these guns. We have house units of a number of them, and I try to actually upload a lot of that data to the website because there's just not a lot published in general regarding muzzleloaders.
You're absolutely right, and I don't know if that's just, it's a blind spot for me here in Nevada because for years it was like a hard tag to draw. You could almost always guarantee yourself an archery tag.
Yeah.
You know, any legal weapon as we refer to it down here, but a rifle tag, essentially, you could come across, you'd draw one of those every couple years or so. I've never drawn a muzzleloader tag, so I never bought a muzzleloader. What got you going? You said you were a gun guy.
Yeah.
What got you going into the rabbit hole of muzzleloader?
Well, we have a storefront we're attached to that specializes in long-range precision stuff, and that's where I started coming in, getting into the long-range game, and found out about the muzzle-loading side of things that the company also puts out. As I did more research and started working here, I just fell in love with it. The way you do black powder and the intimacy with the tool itself is a lot different than center fire. So I've just settled here.
In your field of like precision and long-distance muzzle-loader shooting, is it kind of like archery where you have different divisions based on the type of bow you have?
Right.
Just out of curiosity.
Not that I have seen. I mean, if you go to a rendezvous, you are going to be around a bunch of probably like heritage units, percussion or flintlock, and those guys are pushing those guns out to limits. But there's really just not a huge following like you see with the precision rifle shooting stuff or even the tactical games. You don't have that in the muzzle loading industry, at least not yet.
Without a scope, because, you know, for Nevada, it's got to be, there's no scopes allowed, just iron sights only.
Yep.
So what is a good safe distance or a good accurate distance for iron sights?
Most of the stock sights that are coming on these guns nowadays, if we're looking at, let's say, inlines or even some of the traditional pieces, at about 150 yards, you are covering up a target. If you're holding over an animal, you're not really able to see it beyond 150, and you're at that point, are you really taking an ethical shot? There are upgrades on the market, but most of the guys who are shooting traditional style guns, about 100 yards is as far as they're pushing.
Okay. So these individuals online on some of these hunt group websites are kind of BSing it when they're like, yeah, man, shot my first deer at 470 yards with my muzzle loader. You're like, okay.
It's doable nowadays with the technology we're seeing, but I know myself, I probably wouldn't want to take one that far. I'd be creeping in closer.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Colton. It's Arizona or New Mexico that you can use a scope?
Arizona. New Mexico pulled those regs. They don't have any scopes anymore.
Okay.
But I do believe Arizona and Utah. If you're using a muzzleloader in the rifle season, sure, yeah, use a scope. But in the muzzleloader-only season, you're definitely restricted.
Yeah, because Montana and Idaho are the two that come to mind.
Yeah.
Where I know for a fact, my dad went on a cow elk hunt in Idaho, Colton, and I know he had to essentially retrofit it to use, he wasn't allowed to use 209 primers.
Right.
So in Nevada, we can use 209 primers. We have to use quote-unquote iron sights or non-battery-powered, non-magnified sights.
Yep.
Right.
So let's say a guy like me, for instance, I've shot a muzzleloader before. I've never hunted with one. Give me a few options. And again, for people listening, you can go to muzzle-loaders.com and see some of these guns, see their recommendations. But what would you recommend somebody like me jumps into?
If you're just getting started, you really can't go wrong with some of the entry-level units from either CVA or Traditions. You've got a CVA Wolf with a 24-inch barrel. It's pretty short and maneuverable. It even has a removable spacer nowadays if you ever wanted to hand it off to a youth to start muzzleloading as well. Or like the Traditions Buckstalker. Both of those are capable of shooting out to about 150 yards, which with open sight requirements is going to be that checkbox there about what you're going to take with an ethical shot.
Okay.
So both of those are a great option. I've been able, nowadays, with muzzleloader technology, doing one-inch groups out of the CVA Wolf at 100 yards, which even several years ago, 8 inches at 100 was the gold standard.
Whoa. Oh, now, is that scoped or unscoped?
I was scoped shooting that, but I think if with a steady rest and open sights, it's definitely doable. And you do have the hierarchy of rifles from there. If you were to jump up into something like the CVA Optima or the Traditions Pursuit, both guns from either manufacturer are competitive with each other. You're going to have that 200-yard capability. So with upgraded open sights that are on the market, you've really got the best setup for open sight requirements with a mid-range price gun.
Yeah. I was looking at the Optima V2, I think it was. It was kind of, it fit my budget. It was right about like 300 and change. And that was the one I was kind of eyeballing. That's one you would recommend as kind of that mid-tier?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've got three models of break opens, and you can kind of look at it as an entry-level, mid-level, and expert level. Whereas a lot of people jump right into the Acura, which is what that expert level gun I'd call it, the Optima for open sight requirement states is going to tick every box you need it to and is a phenomenal gun. In fact, I like to use an Optima myself.
Now, is the Wolf V2 just under the Optima?
Yep, that would be that entry level gun with a slightly shorter barrel, slightly different break open mechanism coming in around that $240, $250 price point.
Okay, because that was the one I was looking at because it has that quick disconnect is what it states for. You can take the sight off or the scope off of it and your iron sights are right there, or you can pop the scope back on if you go hunt a legal state for scopes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're drilled and tapped for both. Exactly. Yeah. You can leave the open sights on there, pull the scope off.
Let's take a break real quick. Don't forget, if you miss a segment of the show, you can go to the podcast tab at 991fmtalk.com. Or if you're an Apple user, go to the podcast app and search for Nevada Backcountry. Listening to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and Lyon County's 92.3. Today's guest is Colton Rico from muzzle-loaders.com. When we talk about these guns, I'm assuming that all of these, and this may be a stupid question, but interchangeability of parts. So like, I think of this stuff in terms of in the archery world, right? I've got my bow. I can pick and choose from different sights. I can pick and choose arrows, et cetera, down to the strings, for crying out loud. So with this stuff, like if I have a CVA, is everything interchangeable across the line?
Like the footprint for parts, let's say scopes, you know, across the CVA guns is going to be universal. But when it comes to intricate components, a lot of that's through manufacturer direct. So we're not selling repair parts and pieces for these guns because it's going to go to the manufacturer for stuff like that. But your open sites that fit the CVA models are going to fit all three of those break open models because they do use the same footprint across the units. And that applies to Traditions as well. They use the same footprint on their guns.
You keep mentioning like upgraded open sights. Are there specific brands or what does that look like? I'm familiar with the standard two dots in the rear and fiber optic front sight thing. When you mention these open sights that lead to increased accuracy at extended distances, what are you talking about?
So Williams Gun Sights is a company that produces a bunch of sights for these guns, and they have got the upgraded sights, really the best ones on the market currently for upgrading the open sights. Generally, when you get one of these guns, you've got the OEM fiber optic sights on it with that fiber optic front post and the rear block about midway down the barrel. You're getting about half the sight radius of the barrel on the sights that come with the gun. The Williams sight upgrade is actually going to offer you a globe sight front, which instead of a fiber optic front post, which generally covers up a target at about 150 yards, you can get a tube essentially that fits on the front of the gun with crosshair inserts that are made out of aluminum and really finite, and then a rear peep aperture that goes all the way back by the breech plug to offer you the full sight radius of the barrel. And then you have essentially like looking through a scope without magnification. You've got these finite crosshairs and a rear peep aperture that when lined up does allow you to see farther and hold over on animals and get that extended distance and accuracy.
So it's kind of like an archery peep.
Yeah.
I'd assume looking through through a peep on your bow.
And those are completely legal even for iron sight states.
Exactly. They're running about $110 to throw on there, and they have a number of different units that fit each manufacturer or certain manufacturers. But it is by far one of the most popular sight upgrades that we sell.
Let's say I've got the gun. I've upgraded with some Williams gun sights. I want to take the thing out to the range and start banging away. What am I missing? What do I need? And what do you guys get calls for that people screw up regularly and say, oh no, now I'm in a pickle?
Right. Well, I think getting the gun is half the equation because you're spending just about around probably $150, $250 in accoutrements. You've got a ton of accessories that come with muzzle loading, especially if you're running loose powder. You have to have a measuring device for that loose powder. Ideally, you've got speed loads in case you need to take a follow-up shot, ball starters, jag tips, cleaning the gun regularly. You're really getting into the nitty-gritty of what we get calls about. I mean, we are helping a ton of people get set up who are totally fresh to the industry, and that's what we aim to do. So, I mean, the number one thing that comes to my mind is the inline hunter kit. If you're hunting with, say, one of those CVA Wolfs or Optimas, you're going to want a baggie full of goodies that you can carry with you because there's a ton of accessories you just have to keep with you while you're out in the field in case you do need to take care of the gun. You've got three really important equations with your bullets, your powder, and your primers. And picking those with the right intent is important. There are certain units that don't want to work with certain powders. Blackhorn 209, for example, is an incredibly popular powder, very hard to find, rather expensive, and the cleanest burning powder in the muzzleloader industry that we've seen. But it's got a high heat tolerance. So if you aren't pairing that with a Magnum primer, you may have ignition issues. And we get calls on that often and have to do some troubleshooting.
Okay, say the name of the powder again.
Yeah, Blackhorn 209 powder. That is produced up in Canada. It's by far the most popular powder, I would say, in the muzzleloader realm, just because of how clean it is. Cost follows convenience here in the muzzleloader industry.
Oh, God, that's a good cost follows convenience.
Yeah.
I'll keep that in mind. So basically, the easier it is to clean and or use, the more it's going to cost you.
Exactly. Yeah, that powder is running about $90 for 8 ounces, a half pound, whereas Pyrodex or 777 powders are about $34 for a pound.
Some of the muzzleloader folks that I've gone out with and gone on their hunts with them, a lot of them are like, oh, yeah, you about every 3 shots you need to clean it. So if you use this higher end powder, and if you're using a loose powder, do you clean it every 5 shots or do you still maintain
the
3?
I've heard of folks going as many as 20 with Blackhorn 209.
It is
that clean. Whereas, 5, 6, 7 is pushing it on any other powder.
Now, what about pellets? I mean, are pellets dirtier? A lot of folks seem to use the pellets.
Exactly. And in most states where it's allowed to run pellets, most people do. You get a little bit less for your dollar. Again, cost following convenience there. But the convenience factor on pellets is huge. They're phenomenal, I feel like, for how easy they are to use, the fact that they're pre-measured. You know, like you said, dunk two or three down there and put a bullet on top of it. What we have seen is that you get better accuracy from loose powder because you can get a much more consistent pack. And all it takes is you pushing a bullet too hard on top of a pellet to crack it, and it's going to burn inconsistently and give you accuracy issues.
Oh, I never even thought of that.
Yeah, I've heard that guys that really focus on the accuracy potential of a muzzleloader, like the loose powder, it was explained to me as you can get 93 grains or whatever the powder measurement is versus being tied to a 5 or 10 unit pellet. I never heard the cracking thing.
Right. I agree with you there. In fact, what we're seeing right now is a lot of folks are going from taking volume measurements of loose powder to weighing it, which is a different ratio altogether, but you can get much more consistent with your loads. And the more consistent you are on loading for the depth of the bullet, the powder charge, all that, the more consistent you'll be downrange.
Well, and I think that's important, especially if you're hunting an animal. I mean, the last thing you want is to be kind of shady on your accuracy when you're trying to put an animal down.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be accurate.
Right.
You really do want to be as accurate as possible. So I think that's kind of pushing me to look at more of powders.
Focus on powders. And then I was going to ask, as far as bullets, well, not bullets. What do I want to say? Projectiles.
Well, yeah, projectiles. Yeah.
Projectiles are concerned. What do you recommend for somebody in a state like Nevada where we can use sabots? You know, we've got a whole bunch of stuff available to us. What do you recommend?
So you've got sabots and you've got full bore conicals for your projectiles. Most of the guys running inlines are not shooting round balls, and twist rate of the barrel does come down to what you should shoot. But full bore conicals are the way that we're seeing the trend is going. They're more accurate, and because it's a full bore bullet, you've got bullet in contact with the rifling. With a sabot, you have that plastic sheath filling in the annular space with a 45 cal bullet for a 50 cal gun with the sabot around it, and that plastic is shaving into your rifling every shot. So you have to be more vigorous on cleaning. You're essentially converting the gun into a smoothbore the more you shoot it with plastic in the barrel. So full bore conicals, I would point you to the Hornady bore driver bullet. The Hornady is getting into the muzzleloader realm with the full bore conicals, built a lot like a power belt bullet. Let's say they have a skirt on the base of the bullet to create a gas check for when the powder goes off. But accuracy wise, we've been able to get half inch groups at 100 yards with a half inch bullet.
Whoa. Yeah, that's a one hole. Very cool. Hey, let me ask you real quick. This is kind of a sidebar. When Dave and I did an episode on muzzle loaders, we were both scratching our heads over the confusion in California. So like I go hunt turkeys in California. You can go hunt pigs. We're right here on the border. It's a quick jaunt over.
Right.
So California has a goofy thing where you read one thing, it says it's got to be a 50 caliber barrel, and then you'll read something else that says
45.
Is that what you're talking about with like the sabots, where you have a 50 caliber gun but your projectile is a 45 caliber projectile?
By technicality, it is, right, because you've got an undersized bullet and the sheath around it. They do categorize sabots as the caliber they're listed at. So a 50 cal sabot, although it is a 45 cal projectile, it's still a 50 cal bullet, so to speak.
Okay, so that might be some of the confusion then in the regs in California, because we read through them, and one says it's got to be a 50 caliber this with a minimum of 45 caliber that, and both of us are looking at each other, scratching our heads like, what in the world is going on? But anyway, thank you for letting me sidebar on that. Now, as far as that Hornady bore driver bullet you're talking about, do you hunt with a muzzleloader? I guess would be my first question.
So this year, yes, I've put in for it. I've done archery. I've done centerfire rifle. We have a lottery system here in Oregon, so you have to basically put in and hopefully get drawn. But this year, I'm hoping to. Now, I've done a lot of shooting at the range. I haven't muzzleloader hunted specifically, but a bunch of the other guys in the office here do as well.
Okay, so what would your recommendation? Would that, the Hornady bore driver, would that be something you would recommend for, say, up to like elk size species?
Absolutely. Yep. They have their ELDX bullet nowadays, the Bore Driver ELDX, which is 340 grains. And our recommendation for large game like elk is about 300 grains. Now, you get into the composition of how the bullets are made, it's better to go a little heavier on alloy bullets. So Hornady is killing it with what they've designed. I've had numerous reports of guys successfully taking large game, even moose, with these bullets.
Hey, I've got a question for you relating to muzzleloader bullets and elk, but first we have to go to a break. Don't touch that dial. Nevada Backcountry, brought to you in part by Legacy Sports International, will continue in just a moment. The show is Nevada Backcountry, and our guest today is Colton Rico from muzzle-loaders.com. Hey, I got a weird question for you, Colton. It's kind of out of left field. That cow elk hunt in Idaho that my dad went on, Idaho is real goofy as far as regs and everything, and we can talk a little bit about that in a minute, but strange experience. He had a pretty hot load, and it had to be a, I don't think it was a round ball, but it had to be a solid lead bullet. He got almost no penetration on this cow, you know, shot where it went, where it was supposed to. But that lead projectile, it basically flattened out to about the size of your palm almost. What was he driving them too hot? I mean, what would cause that?
I mean, lead is so soft, it does expand quite easily. I would imagine if you're shooting lead projectiles, probably one of those Hornady Great Plains bullets, real heavy, 385 grains, something around that regard, which is getting up close to back pressure issues, but that's maybe a different topic. I'm not sure. What do you know what kind of load he was shooting? Was it around 100 grains? Or?
You know, I don't off the top of my head, but I know it was a pretty dang hot load, which he was getting really good accuracy at the range. But coming from a state like Nevada, where you can use alloy bullets or jacketed bullets, you know, you don't have to worry about the solid lead projectile. I think we both just kind of figured, yeah, that's good to go. You got an accurate load. This is great. Fortunately, didn't lose the animal, didn't, you know, wound needlessly. It killed the elk for sure, but it was just weird. No penetration. And the only thing we could come up with was he was just driving it so fast, and it was such a close shot that that bullet just expanded rapidly and did not penetrate.
To be that big, as you described it, as the size of your palm, perhaps, that would make sense. What I have seen is that depending on the range to the animal and the charge of the load, you can get a full-on through penetration. In a lot of cases, though, it's better to have the bullet stop in the animal. Then all that inertia and energy that it has is transferred into the animal and not continuing through it.
Good point. All right. Well, hey, thanks for letting me sidebar there. It was just one of those weird, again, being newbies to this. And
yeah,
it was like, oh man, that's weird. That thing is giant and it stayed in. You know, we were used to center fire rifles where generally, unless you really goof up and smack the shoulders, you're going to get a full pass through.
Right. And then with that particular bullet and the charge, I mean, he might have only been going around 1800 feet per second.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, good to know. Oh, Dave, you got something?
Yeah, I got some. So as I was been reading up on some of these different muzzle loaders, so I was reading up on it, and they have like the Wolf V2. You have your regular Wolf V2, I guess it would be a standard or something, but then you have your Northwest Legal Wolf V2. If you buy a Northwest Legal muzzle loader, I'm assuming with those Northwest restrictions being significantly more so than other states, it'd probably be okay to use that anywhere else.
Yeah, you are limiting yourself somewhat by doing that. But yes, if you have a Northwest gun, it is going to be compliant in 209 states, though you're somewhat hamstringing yourself by how much powder you can burn. You're susceptible to the elements because of the exposed ignition. And so really, I would only recommend a Northwest unit if you're doing Oregon or Idaho. The nice thing about the CVA models is they're highly convertible. So you could buy a Northwest gun and then drop a new firing pin and breech plug in it for a 209 system and convert the gun. That way, if you do travel to hunt, it's highly versatile in that regard. It's about a 5-minute process to swap those components. All you need is a flathead screwdriver.
Oh, okay. And you can do vice versa. If you buy, you know, your regular Wolf V2, you can convert it to a Northwest Legal if we ever hunted Oregon or Idaho.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
And Traditions has gotten out of that. CVA now is about the only company we offer that has that convertibility. Traditions now will offer you one or the other. If you buy a Northwest gun, it's a Northwest gun its whole life.
I was reading up on that it's just they're specific.
Take me through the differences on the Northwest specific now. It's not just, is it sights, but it's also powder capabilities or something?
Yeah. I mean, between Oregon and Idaho, you actually have different bullet regulations. Like here in Oregon, we can't have any plastic on our bullets, but we can shoot lead or copper. Copper is really the best thing in our state. And in Idaho, it's lead only, lead projectiles only, but plastic's okay if you run something like a power belt with that plastic skirt. As for the ignition, you are running, instead of a 209 primer, you're running a musket cap, so a primitive form of ignition. Also, it is a percussion cap. It's just hotter than a standard number 11 like you see on a traditional gun. But it's in a breech plug that is exposed to the elements. So if it's raining or snowing on you, it can actually get down into your breech plug and foul that primer so that it doesn't go off, which adds an element of difficulty. And then your firing pin is, of course, different. You do have those loose powder regulations, but with that musket cap ignition, at most, you're only burning about 120 grains by volume of powder at max, whereas the guns are nowadays are all rated for 150.
So those Northwest legal guns, is that the right way to phrase that?
Yeah, that's how they phrase it online.
Okay. Like you said, you're handicapping yourself slightly, but if you wanted to, you could convert that to use 209s and everything. What does a conversion kit cost?
Right around the $50 price point for the CVA conversion kit, and that comes with everything you need to do it.
Yeah, that's not bad.
No.
When I was reading about it, they were saying that there's a lot of, when you have the Northwest legal gun, with what you were stating with like humidity or weather getting inside stuff, you have a very high probability of what they call hang fires and misfires in relation to a 209 ignition system.
Feels a lot like a center fire. It just goes off as soon as you pull the trigger.
Right.
Pull the trigger, the firing pin hits, you hear the pop of the cap, and nothing comes out.
And powder doesn't. Oh, okay.
And it doesn't ignite.
And then hopefully it goes off within a couple seconds. If not, the protocol is just to hang there and wait and then carefully pull that primer off.
Yeah. So it has the possibility of eventually going off. You just don't know when. It's kind of how I read it. And then the misfire is just a straight up the
click,
there's no clicking,
bang.
No bang, no nothing. The one time I shot that flint gun.
A flintlock gun.
Flintlock. Yeah. That was I had no information, no warning, no nothing. They're like, "Oh yeah, just pull the trigger." So I'm like, "Oh, okay." So pull the trigger, you know, there's the process. And I was like, well, and I look up at my buddy, and as soon as I look up and kind of relax, that bloody gun went off. And I'll tell you, I had quite the black and blue elbow up to my neck.
Oh, man.
It was, because I was probably 6 inches from the butt when I looked up and I'm like, it went off and.
Is that pretty typical with those like flintlock percussion guns and stuff? There's a big delay.
There's a 2 second or so, 3 second delay.
It can be. Yeah. I feel like flintlocks are the most difficult to hunt with because you've got your powder in the barrel, powder in the flash pan, which has to be a super finite powder, 4F granulation to be exact, which we can get into the acronym of powder, fine granulation. And you kind of have to feed it into the barrel through the touch hole, and then hopefully your stone sparks the first time and it'll go off smoothly. But yeah, I've talked to a number of folks who have been caught off guard by that with a hang fire. I've had it happen to me as well.
It's miserable.
Do you fool around with like flintlock stuff and all that, Colton?
Yeah. Honestly, the more I do it, the more I like it. And I'm kind of pulling back from inlines and starting to really go down the traditional path.
Wow. Okay. What about the build it yourself kits? Dave and I have talked about this on the show. There's like a romantic side of me that's like, oh man, my coonskin cap, I'll build my own flintlock. This would be awesome. But then I also go, man, I am not fooling with anything that goes bang as far as building it myself.
Oh,
right. No, and it's a lot more work than I think people know. I tell people it's about 100 hours of time investment to get the wood stock sanded down to where you want it, stained, bluing the barrel how you like it, getting it all put together. I mean, they rough cut those things and produce them how they are, and then it is up to the end user to do a lot of the finite work on the gun.
Yeah.
I myself, I'm not a skilled woodworker. I just buy a put together gun.
Yeah, I think that's okay.
I can guarantee you mine's going to look like a kindergarten crayon drawing. There will be some duct tape involved, definitely some wood glue. Yep.
I don't care what it looks like. My thing is my facial features, my wife likes them. My fingers, I need them to work. Like that. That's my concern is, man, I don't know.
Well, I mean, all the major components are from the manufacturer good. You just got to screw it into the stock. So I think you'd be covered there, but let alone that time investment, it's usually a $50 to $70 price difference for a kit versus completed gun. That kind of a price difference and 100-hour time investment, I can do other things.
Yeah, good point. Very good point. So talk to me a little bit about other issues that you guys get called on. You know, you talked about like, okay, getting the gun is the big first step. Then you got to factor in like another, what'd you say, $100, $125 in accessories.
Yeah.
Take me through this. What am I going to be calling you guys about with as far as problems go?
What we did generally get is powder loads that may not be optimal. Perhaps someone is running a not so hot ignition with a certain type of powder that's just, hey, you know, I can't get this thing to go off reliably or my accuracy's all over the place. I think that's the biggest one. So I didn't really say this in the intro, but I'm the CS lead, customer service lead here. So that's exactly what we're here to do is help people through some of these problems. You're welcome to give us a call and troubleshoot. We can get most of it figured out.
If you've been following along and missed a muzzleloader name or a primer powder combo you want to try, you can always go back and listen to Nevada Backcountry on 991fmtalk.com. Just click on the podcast tab. Final segment of the show here. Big, big thanks to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, and Hunt and House Archery Shop for sponsoring Nevada Backcountry. Now, where we left off.
When you run into, let's say, Winchester primers, for example, they only seem to work well with 777 powder. So when you start pairing them with pellets or Pyrodex powder, I've talked to a number of folks who have accuracy issues. And as soon as we change out that one component of the primer, the accuracy issues go away. And that's not what you'd think. You'd think bullet or powder, but not primer. All three of those are going to play into the equation. So most people, what I see, if they're having issues, we identify bullet, powder, and primer. And once that's all identified, we can remedy it from there. And that's how we fix a lot of it.
Oh, okay. So a lot of it is primer-based issues.
That's what I see the most. Right now, we've got some French primers in the States that are phenomenal, but a lot of what we know and love, like Federal and CCI, are nowhere to be found.
If everything and anything was available, the world's my oyster when it comes to primers, what are you recommending I pick up?
Federal 209A primers are the hottest primer on the market from the pressure testing data I have seen, in conjunction with either 777 or Pyrodex powder or the Blackhorn 209 if it was plentiful. That's a great combo. That the standard deviation on Blackhorn 209 is the smallest of all of them. So very, very consistent powder, hence why it's so popular. In conjunction with that Federal 209A primer, I'd point you to the Hornady bore driver bullets with that, or the Thor bullets are a phenomenal one. That's where you're getting into copper bullets versus alloy bullets, and copper just has way better mass retention, so more inertia dispensed into the animal.
You said Thor, as in like Greek god Chris Hemsworth, Thor.
That's right. Yep.
Okay.
Or like the superhero. They are a bullet we offer that's actually the best bullet for here in Oregon, but very, very popular across the rest of the U.S. Colorado hunters favor it for sure for big game. And I definitely have some Nevada customers running Thors as well.
Okay. Now, let's say current situation, reality. I can't find Federal 209A primers to save my soul. What are you recommending that generally I could find at your website, I could find at Sportsman's Warehouse, etc.?
Yeah, the Chedite Clarinox CX2000 primers, a total mouthful of a name, but they're in a pink blue box.
My God, the name alone, I'd be like, forget it, what's next?
Go one more time, Chedite? Yeah, yeah.
Cheddite is the brand, CHEDDITE, and then they call them the Clarinox CX2000 primers. Those are those French primers coming in right now, which in the pressure testing data is coming up as like very close second to the hottest primer on the market. So big fan of those. We offer them. A lot of the big box stores have them as well. And in conjunction with that, the 777 or Pirate X loose powders are plentiful, easy to find. And in our velocity testing, 777 FFG, so fine granulation, is on par with Blackhorn 209 for velocity, about a 20 foot per second difference with equivalent charges. So if you're looking for something with good velocity to compare, 777 is a great option. It's also a little bit cleaner than Pirate X. But okay. Pirate X powder can boast 150 feet per second above Blackhorn 209 with its velocities, Pirate X Select. So either Pirate X or 777 are great options. For most folks, I point to 777 because it's consistent and it's easier to clean. You'll get more shots on the barrel. And then the bore driver bullets have been phenomenal, and they are easy to get a hold of. A lot of places have those as well. To dive a little bit more into the powder, Blackhorn is clean, and you may be able to get 20 shots in a row with that. Realistically, right, on an animal, you're lucky to get a follow-up shot.
Yeah, so exactly.
I look more at performance of the powder in comparison. While Pirate X Select is dirty, we can get 3 to 4 shots on a barrel before we have to clean it because that bullet is so tight to load down there, it's just not going. But on an animal, that's good. You want that energy.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Now, you brought up standard deviation, so what are we talking, single digits with muzzle in the muzzle loading world or no?
Not that precise. No, I mean, we're generally around like, I'd say 12 to 15 on Blackhorn, which is good, but you're around 50 to 60 on a lot of the other powders.
Okay, understandable. Yeah, with hunting, man, I'm lucky if I get one shot.
Yeah.
Maybe if you duff it, you get a follow-up on a cripple, but I'm not really worried about barrel cleanliness at that point.
No.
Right.
I got a page full of notes as we've been talking here.
I do too.
Colton,
I got a couple here, but man, yeah. I am super jazzed now about getting a muzzle loader.
So Optima CVA Optima V2 or CVA Wolf V2. I like the interchangeability because I would like to go up to Idaho. And
Oregon.
CVA is the only one you said with that kind of interchangeable. You can go Northwest Legal or vice versa.
Yeah. For like $50, right?
Exactly.
The kit.
Yep.
What, Traditions just isn't offering that?
Not any longer, no. Now, their guns are great. The vapor barrels that they're offering now have been highly accurate. Their tolerances are super well made. So big fan of that. And they're lighter. So if you're a backpacker who's way out in the boonies there hunting with a muzzleloader, Traditions may be a better option for you. But you're right. They do not any longer offer conversion kits for them. So if you buy a 209 Traditions, it's going to be a 209 gun its whole life and vice versa for Northwest.
Okay. What are we talking weight-wise on these? I mean, we in the ballpark with like a center fire, like 7 to 9-ish pounds in that range?
6.65 pounds on an open-sided Optima. So And then...
Well, you brought up, you made it a point to mention the weight, and I thought, oh, holy smoke, what are we talking about like 14 pounds, like a long-range precision rifle weight, or what are we talking about?
On the CVA Paramount, perhaps, yeah, that's the big coup de grace gun, right? It's the step above the Acura. It's their highest-end model, of course, not available right now on the market, but should be back out this year. That's your precision gun. That's what we pushed out to 1,000 yards. But comparison, you're 6.65 pounds on an Optima, you're 5 3/4 on a Traditions gun, the Pursuit, which is the direct competitor. Almost a full pound.
Wow. Gotcha. But yeah, they're pretty light. We're not talking, unless you jump into that, like you said, high-end flagship gun stuff, then you start getting heavier and heavier.
Yeah, like 10 pounds for a base gun, and then you're throwing a scope and stuff on there. Yeah.
So if I was to go out with the information that we've just gathered to acquire a gun and some components to like go out and shoot, what we're saying here is like, for me, the CVA Wolf V2 with the 777 with the
FFG.
777 FFG powder and the Hornady driver bullets, obviously all the little knickknacks to make sure it goes in the barrel and stuff. And I should be doing pretty well. And then just from there, I'm fine-tuning.
As long as you're changing one component at a time.
If
you change multiple variables, then it's super hard to get any reading off of that.
Yeah.
I was going to add in here, like, if I could only buy one model, knowing what I know, here, I pick an Acura MRX. So the CVA Acura series is their highest end break open model. It's essentially a baby Paramount in my eyes. The LRX, the Long Range Extreme series, is capable of pushing a 50 cal bullet at around 2200 feet per second. It's going to reach out 300 plus yards. And if you wanted to convert it and go hunt Idaho or Oregon with it, you could. The Paramount doesn't offer you that. You're locked into a certain ignition. The Acura is their highest end break open model and highly versatile. So everybody here hunts with one. And if I could only pick one, I like the MRX personally. But any of the lineups from both Traditions and CVA have been phenomenal.
Okay. So the CVA MRX.
Acura MRX, you said that would be your one and done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And when I have folks tell me they want to buy something high-end so they don't need to look at another gun for however many years to come, the Acura series seems to have a lot of the nice features. You've got a Bergara-made barrel. They're threading it now for a muzzle brake, adjustable trigger pull on it, same footprint and versatility as the other CVA guns, but you've also got a cheek comb that's adjustable if you're running scope or open sights. The Bergara barrel is really the claim to fame with that. They've also free-floated it on that unit, but muzzle brakes now are making their popularity run in the muzzleloader world.
What are we talking cost variation between, say, the Optima, the Wolf, the Optima, and the Acura series, this Acura MRX?
Yeah, you're around that $250 price point on a Wolf, jumping up to that $350 for an Optima and $650 on an Acura. Okay. So it does have quite a jump to that particular unit.
Oh, okay. Man, thank you, Colton. I'll give you the final thoughts. Anything you want to leave listeners with?
You know, there's no better time than now to get into it. Muzzleloaders have jumped in technology a ton in the last 4 years alone. And the technology now, it is easy to get sub-1-inch groups out of these guns now right off the shelf. So no better time than now. A lot of your hunting seasons are the best with muzzleloading. I highly recommend getting into it. Even if you pick up one and maybe only put in for a tag on a semi-regular basis, it's worth having at this point just because of the availability we've seen with everything else going on and the ability to feed your family.
Yeah, 100%.
I like
cool.
that. Yep. I mean, I really thank you for your insight. You've really helped me narrow down like what direction I'm going to start going. I mean, when I'm fiddle-farting around through the stores, I will definitely be looking for certain powders, and if they have them available, I'm going to snatch them up. But no, I really appreciate you coming on.
A lot of what I've discussed is actually on our website. If you type in accuracy or velocity, it'll pull up all of our published data that we've done getting out to the range and testing this stuff.
Man, you guys, wealth of information on the website.
Yeah, and I was going to say too, if you get questions from your listeners regarding certain testing and data, we love that stuff. So feel free to direct it to us if you want. If people have a demand for seeing certain velocities or what kind of drop you're seeing from 100 to 200 to 250 to 300, we love to go out and do that. We have a YouTube channel as well, which is just muzzle-loaders.com. We've got 500 plus videos uploaded there of just ins and outs of everything.